You're listening to Central Illinois Business. Hi, Alex Ruggieri. It is a delight to have you spend some of your time with us each morning on the weekend. And we have got a fantastic show lined up for you today, starting right out with Josh Whitman, recently named CIB Man of the Year, the Athletic Director for University of Illinois. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thrilled to be here.
Yeah, this is fantastic for me to get the opportunity to have you in on the show. And we always work hand in hand with Central Illinois Business Magazine and do an interview with the Man of the Year and the Woman of the Year. And I was out of town during the luncheon, but I understand you were able to make some remarks because several people commented that you really had a good talk that you shared. And anyway, so were you surprised when they got a hold of you and all of that?
I was shocked and very humbled, certainly, to be included in such great company here in our community, and very grateful for the honor, and very, very much surprised.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's our 10th year doing that, and I am a huge fan of Central Illinois Business Magazine, but particularly on this 40 Under 40 that they started so many years ago. They had a reception the night before the lunch, and I went to that because I've been the judge on the panel a couple of times in the last 10 years. And then also two of my sons were 40 Under 40 awardees, or however you call that, over the years. AJ, who is an attorney here in town, and then Raphael, who is a surgeon at Christie. So I'm a big fan. And I think that, unfortunately, the media in so many ways is always shining a light on negative examples, you know, of younger people. And this was something that I saw was positive and constructive. And they do it every year. And I know in the 10th year, we've had 400 people and 20 men of the year. And you are in really good company with some of the other awardees. But anyway, I thought it'd be interesting for you to tell us a little bit about your background and, you know, how you grew up and the kind of the mentors you had and the things that kind of shaped your life.
Happy to. I grew up in West Lafayette, Indiana. Both my parents were educators. My dad was a high school teacher. My mom was an elementary school teacher. And my dad was also a coach. He coached some basketball. He was a college basketball player and also some high school tennis. And so from a very young age, it felt like I was raised with a ball in one hand and a book in the other. And those two things really have shaped a lot of who I've grown into now as an adult, this idea of education and athletics, and
right.
That really has formed the contours of much of my life. And so I played all kinds of sports growing up. I was very active in school, and ultimately had the good fortune to come here at the University of Illinois on a football scholarship, and studied finance. And when I was finished, was again fortunate to have a chance to bump around the National Football League for a few years. And I always tell people I practiced a lot more than I played, and I was humbled by being essentially fired 7 times before I was 25 years old, which was interesting experience. And and then returned here after that was finished, and went to law school, worked in our athletic program while I was doing that. When I finished law school, did the law thing for a couple of years, never really expected to make
Chicago
a career of it.
At that time.
I clerked for a year for a judge in Chicago on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, mm-hmm. and then I was at a major law firm out in Washington, D.C. for just over a year.
Okay.
And then I got the bug, and I had always wanted to be a college athletic director ever since I was in college and really started to understand what a college athletic director does. And so when a position opened up in La Crosse, Wisconsin, the athletic director at the University of Wisconsin La Crosse, Division III program, I never had really heard of La Crosse, Wisconsin, never stepped foot in La Crosse, Wisconsin, didn't know a person there, and had never really been exposed to Division III athletics. But I knew what my passion was, which was college athletics. I knew I wanted to be a college athletic director, and I felt like the best way to prepare to be a college athletic director was to be a college athletic director. And so I Was fortunate to move my way through the interview process, and ultimately, I got lucky. They felt like I was the right person for that job at that particular time, and sold my house in D.C., moved across the country to a place I didn't know anybody.
Wow, and really changed careers.
Changed careers. I had to. I remember at the time thinking about I was going to basically walk across this bridge and leave the law behind and never probably come back. And I had to be comfortable with that because I had just spent 5 years of my life preparing and building a career in the law. And
but it takes 3 to 5 years to build that up.
It absolutely does.
Yeah. And, so you were really sacrificing a lot.
I did. Well, in a lot of ways, it was. I took a pay cut of more than 50%. I was really committed to getting back into college athletics in a leadership position. That was something that mattered a lot to me. And I ended up being in lacrosse for 4 years and then got my next opportunity as the athletic director at Washington University in St. Louis, another really fine Division III program. And then got lucky again, and a year and a half ago got the call to come back home, come here to Champaign, and have been very fortunate
to
be here ever since.
So they called you. That's kind of cool.
They did, and as they did when I went to Wash U, and so it's nice. You try to do good work, and it's humbling when you're recognized for that and have other opportunities. And each step along the way, I've always tried to focus on what I'm doing at that moment and not do it as a means to get to something else. And
right, right.
I take a lot of pride in that, and certainly that was the case at UW La Crosse. And when I got to Wash U in St. Louis, really thought I would be there for a long time, and never expected to be there less than 2 years, and now to be here, and just as happy as I've ever been, and to have the opportunity to provide some leadership to our university and our athletic program has been just unbelievably humbling.
Oh, it's fantastic. And we're delighted to have you, that's for sure. And most everybody out there knows. But for the benefit of those who don't really understand college athletics and all of that, what does the athletic director do?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I tell people that every day is like a snowflake. They're all completely different than the days before. There are no 2 days alike. I think there's a common misperception among some people that I just watch games all day, which I don't. I do attend as many games as I can, but I would say in the scheme of things, it's less than 5% of my total time.
Sure.
You generally talk about the things that I do, and I put them into a handful of pretty large buckets. The athletic director spends a lot of time planning for and ultimately executing plans to raise money. To support the athletic program.
Right, okay. So you do some development work.
A lot of development work.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's probably, if I were to put it in a single, put them in order, that's probably what I spend more time doing than anything else.
You don't work necessarily with the foundation because they're doing their own projects, right? You do your own for athletics?
We do work with the foundation.
Oh, you do? Okay.
We have a fundraising staff of roughly 20 people in the athletic program,
wow.
And they collaborate across
That's
campus
cool.
and with the foundation. And so there's a lot of overlap. There's a lot of opportunity to work together on different projects.
Mm-hmm.
You always want to know what other people are doing. It doesn't represent us very well if we go in and talk to a particular donor and ask him or her for money 1 week, and then the next week somebody else goes in there from the university and asks him for money. So you try and be coordinated in your effort and thoughtful and respectful of the people with whom we're working.
Sure.
And so that is a big part of what I do. Do a lot of work on personnel, staff management, leadership, mm-hmm. Internal matters, working through hiring, reviewing different employment situations. We've got a total staff in the athletic program of about 300 people.
Wow.
It's a big operation, and 16 of them are head coaches. Work very
so
closely with them.
So you would have been the one that would have brought Lovey on? Or?
I did. Okay. So I was fortunate enough to bring Lovey on my third day on the job.
Wow.
And so it was an interesting story and a good beginning to my tenure, and really I think lit a fire under our fans and across the Illini Everybody's Nation quickly out of the gate.
People got excited.
They have gotten excited, yeah. And that's been fun to be a part of. So that part is another big part of the job. Do a lot of work on the facility side, trying to develop capital projects and looking at our physical plant to make arrangements for upgrades where those are needed. Work a lot with our student athletes, so spend a lot of time getting to know them, attending practices, competitions, travel with our teams pretty regularly, and then working through any issues they might have, good and bad. And so that's all those things together take up the vast majority of my time.
That's interesting.
Obviously, there's a lot of individual pieces within each of those buckets, but in general, those are big buckets. And then the last one I would say is campus and conference relationships. And so we spend a lot of time working with campus leadership, whether it's the chancellor or sure. different deans, and then also at the conference office, the commissioner and my colleagues. And the AD chair at other institutions on governance issues, and so it's a challenging job. It's an interesting job. It certainly is one that, as I said, keeps me on my toes and presents a new challenge every day. And that's one of the things I enjoy about it.
Oh yeah, yeah. You'll never be bored a day in your life. You find something you love doing, you'll never be bored a day in your life. Okay, I have to take a quick break for our sponsor's sake. But when I come back, maybe we can talk a little bit more about Man of the Year and that kind of stuff, too.
Absolutely.
All right. We'll be right back after this brief word from our sponsor. And we're back. You're listening to Central Illinois Business. Alex Ruggieri here and just having a delightful interview with Josh Whitman, who is the athletic director, as many of you know, at the University of Illinois, but also so pleased to announce just recently awarded the Man of the Year for Central Illinois Business Magazine. Now, I'm curious, do you know who nominated you?
As I understand it, Kent Brown, who is our Associate Athletic Director for Media Relations, submitted one nomination. I also understand that there were several young people who nominated me, children.
Really?
And so I mentioned in my remarks at the luncheon recently that I never knew I was so popular with the child demographic. It's was a new
under 12
new
set.
That's right, a new group that I apparently have connected with. So I was proud to be nominated by some kids in the area.
Oh, isn't that great? Well, I did get a chance to talk with Kent on the phone a couple of times in setting up this interview, and I would have thanked him if I'd have known that he was the one. So we'll have to make sure that he gets properly thanked for that. And when you got the call, what did you think?
I really was touched. I had no idea. If I remember right, I think I'd been out on vacation for a few days, and I came back and had been contacted about this. And like I said, just very unexpected. wasn't something that was on my radar at all, and meant a lot that that Kent would think enough to nominate me, and then for the review panel to concur with some of his recommendations and see fit to put me in that particular spot. It like I said, very, very humbling.
Yeah, it's really cool stuff. I'm curious. I wasn't there. I was out of town during the luncheon. I did go to the mixer the night before, but wasn't able to go to the luncheon. And several people have commented to me about the remarks you made. And I wouldn't expect you to give your speech, but I mean, are there some things that you recall that you shared with everybody that you can maybe share with our listeners?
The real focus of the message, I think, was I wanted to encourage people, either as individuals or collectively as a community, to be, I think what I said was, bold in their decision making. I think that often it's very attractive to just stay simple, to not take risks, to avoid really putting yourself out there. And I think that that's not always the best course of action. Sometimes you have to be prepared to make big decisions and make big moves, whether you're talking about yourself and your own life or your business and something that you're leading or a community of people. And I reflected back on a few experiences I've had. One I mentioned earlier was leaving the law and taking this job at a small school in Wisconsin as an example of where you have to be bold and you have to take some risks. And when I talk to students, which I'm fortunate to be able to do pretty regularly, that's always a focus of my message to them, is that you prepare, and when opportunity presents itself, if you hesitate, you'll miss it. And there was an example in my life anyway where if I had hesitated, I very well could still be at that law firm, and I certainly wouldn't be sitting here. And it's sometimes those gambles pay off.
Yeah, well, my guess is you're probably making a little bit more than you were when you left and took a 50% pay cut.
I've made up for the loss there. Yeah. It's certainly, again, very humbled by that, but it's over time, it certainly has worked its way out.
Yeah. Now, was there anybody in your life when you were younger, you've mentioned young people several times, that had an influence on you, or a teacher, a coach, or a parent, or a relative, or somebody like that that...
It's such a long list. I really couldn't even begin to identify individuals. My parents, without question, yeah, have been unbelievably influential in my life. But also coaches, teachers. That's one of the things that I think really hooked me into college athletics, or into athletics in general, was just having so many influential coaches come through my life, dating all the way back to when I was really a young boy. And seeing and reflecting back now on what a difference they really made in the person I've become, I think that's one of the most attractive elements of college athletics, is the relationship that our coaches form with our student athletes, and the important role that they play in mentoring and helping build and develop these college people. And that's just so much fun and so, I think, socially important to be a part of. And there was a time in my life when I kind of batted around the idea of trying to get involved in professional sports on the management side. And I thought, you know, there just wasn't the same social relevance, mm-hmm, that professional athletics really, at the end of the day, is a lot about winning and losing. And certainly there's a lot about winning and losing in major college athletics too, but there's this really important core piece, which is the growth and development of our student athletes that you don't see anywhere else.
Yeah. Oh, that makes so much sense when you explain it. I think, and you know, the professional league and all of that, is everything's bigger and the money's bigger and everything else is bigger, but the relationships with those students, that's something that, you know, that's hard to replace.
It really is the foundation of what we do. I tell our student athletes, I always meet with our incoming freshmen and talk about, I think there really are two key pillars to college athletics. One is the relationships they form with their teammates, mm-hmm, which will endure
for
long, long after
decades,
they're gone from,
yeah,
here. Mm-hmm. And then the second is the relationships that they form with their coaches, which, if done right, should also endure long after they're gone from here. And I know just from firsthand experience that my coaches here at Illinois in high school and even earlier than that are people I'm still in very regular contact with, and really give them a lot of credit for the life that I've been able to lead and the success that I've been fortunate to have.
What about personal philosophy or anything? Are there, you know, if I were to ask you to tell a young person the three things that really have been touchstones for you that have guided you in making decisions and along the way as you've had your, you know, trajectory and career?
There are a lot of things. I think if I were to try and distill it down to three, one, I think, is the ability to focus,
mm-hmm,
the ability to really block out external, mm-hmm, distractions. And there's a great book out right now called The One Thing, which I think is really compelling. And it talks about how this idea of multitasking is very popular. But
yeah, you're right.
At the end of the day, if you want to do quality work, whether it's work as a father, work as a spouse, or work as an employee, you really need to focus on one thing at a time, do it as well, mm-hmm, as you can, and then move on to the next thing. And, mm-hmm, and that's really been a mantra of mine for a long time.
That's good.
So I think that's been one thing. I think the second thing probably is just simple work ethic. I, for a long time, dating back to when I was playing football, I was never the biggest, never the fastest, but I just had this peace inside of me that refused to be outworked, and I've always felt like that was the great equalizer, and that I may not be the smartest person in the room, but I won't let somebody else outwork me, and that has helped, not surprisingly, as I've worked through my career. And then I think the last thing, and you touched on this, is having a certain level of humility, never pretending to have all the answers. And I often have, when I've had big decisions to make, like moving from the law firm to the school in Wisconsin, having a group of people around me who I could consult with, people who knew me, who knew my values, who knew my goals, and who were in a position through their own life experiences to offer perhaps a more informed perspective on different opportunities that might present themselves. And so I always encourage our students to identify their own circle of trust, people who they really rely on at tough moments to help them with big decisions or difficult circumstances. And it can be a pretty lonely world out there. And if you don't surround yourself with great people who you know and who trust you, it can be a pretty difficult journey.
Yeah, and who care, you know?
Absolutely.
Who really care.
Absolutely.
And there are people like that, and they're rare. And so when you find those people, you need to keep those connections alive. And the other thing that you know, went through my mind when you were talking about the work ethic, and the young people may not remember this person, but most people know Jay Leno, right?
Sure.
And when Jay, you know, because I remember listening to him on a talk show one time. Of course, Jay is phenomenal success, and he's retired now, and he's doing more shows, and he's doing more fun things than he's ever done. And I looked up his net worth. It's like $500 million, you know. And so he's done pretty well for himself. But when he first went, nobody would give him any work. And because he didn't look right, and, you know, he had long stringy hair and all this stuff, and he was kind of the young avant-garde kind of guy. But he was willing to work hard. And, if they say, hey, Jay, we need you to be down, you know, on a Sunday afternoon down at this certain shore pier where they're doing it, you know, will you go and entertain these people? And he would do it. And he just kept doing it and working hard. And he just said, this town will never let me in the front door, speaking of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to work hard enough that I'll come in the back door. And that's what he did. And he ended up being one of the most successful comedians of all time.
No question. I think an interesting story about Jay Leno that I read is he continued to do stand-up all the way while he was doing the Tonight Show.
And he never gave up his day job.
Never gave it up. And, and in fact, I think what I read was that he lived off the income that he generated doing stand-up. He never spent a dollar of the money that he made doing the Tonight Show. That was kind of his moonlighting job. And he continued to do the stand-up to provide for himself and his family. And
Isn't that incredible?
What an incredible opportunity for him. And he's in a perfect example of somebody who really has worked hard to put themselves in the position they're in.
Well, it's been a delight to have you in the studio and to get a chance to meet you and to listen to you share some of your personal thoughts and values. And I am delighted that Central Illinois Business Magazine has awarded you Man of the Year. And I'm delighted that you came to share with us here in the studio today.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the time.
You bet. And thank you for listening. Please don't go away. We have much more right after the break. Hello, we're back. You're listening to Central Illinois Business. Alex Ruggieri here. Thanks for staying with us through the break. And here in the top half of the hour, I have Amanda Price with me. She is with Keller Williams. Welcome.
Thank you. Hello. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, yeah. Well, I really am always excited to have you on the show. We've had you several times. With Keller Williams Real Estate, people know that when I do this show, I'm actually, you know, in real life, a real estate person, and I don't do residential, do commercial. But you have one of the leading, if not the leading, residential and or just overall, you guys do everything. Real estate companies in our area. It's been amazing to watch.
Yeah, we're very blessed. It's 10 years young, and we are last year celebrated taking number one in market share. So
cool.
We were excited about that. And we've just got some great people that we're in business with over there. And we are the leading company now in agent count and volume.
Cool.
And we're cool. Proud of it. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I would think a lot of that would have to do with you.
Well, you're very nice. Thank
you.
No,
it's true, because, I mean, you're the one that's running the thing, and you're the one that's doing a lot of the recruiting, and I don't know that you necessarily do the training. I know they do get training.
Yeah, we're the number one training company across all industries, which is very fascinating. So, I mean, they even outperform Google. For, so it's not just the real estate industry. So
who
it's fun.
That?
You know, MAPS is a coaching program, and they do surveys and things like that, and they track it. So I think it's some result-driven, you know, survey of some sort. So we're, yeah, we're lucky in that. And the neat thing is it's not just about real estate. So, you know, leadership, mindset, goals, and those kind of things. So, you know, we're a firm believer that it starts with you and, you know, get yourself figured out, and then, you know, the rest happens.
Yeah, no, that is so true. I mean, it really does. I was just watching a video. One of my real estate coaches, actually, is a fellow out of California, Jim Gillespie, and he sends me things all the time. And he sent me this. It was only a 2 or 3 minute video. I'll be happy to share it with you. It was from Barbara Corcoran, who is a very famous real estate professional, and many people have seen her on the show Shark Tank,
right?
Because she's the only real estate person on there, but she's also extremely successful in that same kind of level as all of the other people that are on Shark Tank. And she said in this 2 minute video, they asked her, you know, what is the thing, the one thing, if there's one thing that defines whether or not a person's going to be successful or not, because, you know, education doesn't, looks don't. You know, all these other traits that you would think, oh, you know, that, you know, they're a shoe-in.
Right.
Sales training or whatever. No, it, what she said it was the ability, how quick it took them to get up after they took a hit.
Fell down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Failing forward.
Right.
Call that.
Failing forward. And so she said that is the one denominating factor that, you know, if those people, the difference between people making $40,000, $50,000 a year in real estate, and some of her agents were making $8 million a year in real estate, had to do with their ability to get back up after they had been knocked down.
It's a great video. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. I would definitely, because I sent it to Diane Danielson, who's the chief operating officer of our company in Boston, and she happened to be at a meeting I was at yesterday, and I said, you got to see this, you know.
Yeah,
it's really good.
It's awesome.
Stuff.
I love it.
But that's the kind of stuff, and I see you guys on Facebook a lot, and you've got the values and the principles and the people, and you take a picture of them and they're behind that, and it just kind of underscores what you guys are all about.
Yeah, I think we've had a good understanding of having high standards and abiding to those standards and developing an internal culture, not only of an environment of productivity, but of giving back. And that's probably the part that I'm most proud of is just the culture that we've created inside the company.
Now, speaking of giving back, tell us about this event that you have been as a company behind for many, many years. Can you tell us a little bit about
that? The history of it is we began at the good old VFW, and our first year we wanted to raise $10,000 for the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, and we did something called a cash bash. And we hit the goal, we signed a check, and we gave over $10,000, and they were able to buy a lot of food
with
that
money. That's amazing.
Yeah, so we were so proud of that. And the next year, we switched over to the Wounded Warriors. We were approached that they had a regional office, that the money would stay regionally. And we had a few veterans in our office, and the one veteran was pretty passionate about it. So we all took a vote, and we said, let's switch over to that. And that next year, we raised almost $20,000. And then from there, the university got wind of our efforts and what we were doing and awareness for the veterans. And Garrett Anderson actually reached out and said, hey, they're building a center right here in our backyard in Champaign-Urbana that I think you need to know about. So, of course, we got together with the U of I and we found out the plans. And it's at the time, it didn't have a name yet. They were going to be the first fully comprehensive center in the world, let alone in the United States and in Illinois, that served wounded veterans in higher education. So their mission was when something happens to you during service, many don't have a plan B. And they also have a myth inside their mind that they're incapable of going on to a university. And so their goal was to capture and get in touch with these people and say, hey, we'll support you. We'll give you the therapy. We'll meet the needs that you're going to have coming out of an injury and get you through higher education. So right away, we said yes. So that first year, it was for funding of the building. And Ron Chess stepped up and donated $6 million.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so he got the naming rights, of course, and he should. So it's the Chez Family Center Foundation at the University of Illinois, and it's over on Nevada and Lincoln. And people can set appointments and go on tours of the center, and I would encourage people to do that. So that next year, then, we knew we had to step it up. We knew $20,000 wasn't going to do it because they had a budget of $14 million to build it.
Wow.
So we decided to change things up, and we went over to the iHotel. We added live auctions and silent auctions and a fund the mission portion of it, and got a keynote speaker that year, and we raised $50,000 that year. So pretty
fun. Crazy.
So here we are 5 years later, and last year was over $200,000.
That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So we're pretty fun. We're proud of it.
And when is the event?
It is Veterans Day weekend. We were excited about that, the way Veterans Day landed, and we observe Veterans Day on Friday, November 10th. So we booked the iHotel this year for Friday, November 10th at 6 p.m., and that's going to be when the big fun happens.
Wow, that's fantastic. And I am pretty excited about your guest speaker. Why don't you tell us about your keynote?
Yeah, we reached out. Facebook is just an amazing thing, first of all. And Dave Barr, another real estate professional, and he's a staple in this community. I've had a relationship with him from the time I started.
Oh, he's a great guy. Yeah, I've known him for 40 years.
He's amazing. And his son grew up always wanting to be a Marine. And he, in fact, enlisted, and he has gone on 4 tours and is just coming out of being a Marine. And I reached out to Dave and said, hey, this is perfect. Chris Barr, coming out of the Marines, going into college, he's going to go to college. Can I get together with you guys and talk about the center and see if he has some interest in being a keynote? So, of course, neither Dave nor Chris knew even about this center here at U of I.
That's something.
Yeah. So that's the one big part of our mission is the awareness. And we took them through the center, and right away they were in. They fell in love with it. Chris actually said, had he known there were people that he served with, that he could have shared this information that had sustained injuries. And so he's pretty excited about it. So we've asked him to be the keynote, and he accepted that honor. And so Friday night, he'll have a speech and share his story. And we're excited about that.
Oh, cool. And I've kind of followed him on Facebook, too, because his dad is so good about posting pictures.
Yep.
And see, the thing of it is that the center, which is the first in the world, never mind in the United States, that helps veterans who are coming back, maybe who have been wounded, to get reengaged in education, is not, to me, a surprise that it's right here at the University of Illinois. And many people don't realize that it was the University of Illinois way back after World War II that welcomed back the veterans from the war with handicap accessible everything. Yeah, they invented it.
Right. Dr. Tim Nugent.
Right. And so much of the legislation that eventually evolved into Americans with Disability Act had its roots here at the University of Illinois, and all of the programs and ideas that we came up with to help our veterans coming back from World War II, so that we would have this center, you know, for our modern day veterans, to me is no surprise. But you're right, we need to get the word out.
We do. And, you know, it's fascinating with Dr. Nugent. Dean Gallagher, Tanya Gallagher, is the dean of the Department of Applied Health and Sciences. And this was her vision, mentored by Dr. Nugent. So the two of them, of course, consulted each other, and she had the vision for the center. And he was there at the ribbon cutting. And many people don't know this, but I find it just amazing that he actually passed on Veterans Day. So,
really?
Yeah. And I just think, isn't that something, that somebody who served at such a high level for our veterans and being a part of cutting the ribbon for the center and then later passed on Veterans Day?
I think it was, was it John Adams and I think it was Thomas Jefferson who both died on the 4th of July, 50 years after
Is that right?
Yeah. They both died on the 4th. I mean, you couldn't write a screenplay like that.
No, no. And yeah. I find that really neat, that the legacy that he left behind and then to pass on that day.
Yeah.
And, you know, they always say it's not about when you were born or when you passed, but it's everything that you do in
the
between.
Dash, right.
Yeah, the dash. And so he made such an impact on this community. Dean Gallagher carried it on. And now for us, it's about the programming. Obviously, our state, sometimes we have funding issues and we've got to keep the center open. We don't want to rely on the government. We want to keep private funding going. They have alumni who invest. And so for us, it's just keeping the programming going. So this year, we're going to go for $175,000 on that evening to be raised, and it'll go straight towards programming.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That is fantastic. How can people get involved?
Well, you can do a few different ways. One, at kwcashbash.com, you can just make a donation.
Okay.
If you want to attend the event, it's $200. And that is per couple. So it admits two people. It provides dinner for both of them. It's wine and beer. And all of that is unlimited, of course. And then that gets them as an entry into the Cash Bash drawing. And the Cash Bash has kind of moved to the side on all of this because people aren't there necessarily to win the money. Mm-hmm. They're there to support it. But you mm-hmm. have the opportunity to win. Mm-hmm. And the first ball out is $500.
Wow.
And so you can win your money back, of course, on the ticket. And so we'll have an evening of Fund the Mission. We've got different stuff that we're mixing it up with this year. We have a young man who was on The Voice, and he sings Frank Sinatra.
Cool.
And so he's going to come in and be a singer for us and do the national anthem. We've got cool. the Color Guard presenting colors this year. So it's a very touching evening. I would say that we're up there as the top three events in the community.
Where is it going to be held?
It'll be at the I Hotel, and it'll start at 6 o'clock on Friday night. It's a home game that weekend, so it's Dad's Day.
Oh,
so we
wow.
didn't want to interfere with football.
Right.
And Veterans Day was observed on that Friday, so we chose to do that Friday evening.
Right. Oh,
yep.
That's fantastic. Okay, so they can go to kwcashbash.com. What if they want to buy a ticket for attending?
If they want to buy a ticket, there's a button there for them to purchase, and it'll have all the details on what that includes. Some people have even purchased tickets to send a veteran. Garrett Anderson stays in contact with the veteran services here locally, of course, and he actually is still a part of the center. So if you're unable to attend and your radio reaches many areas outside
right.
of Champaign-Urbana, you could certainly purchase a ticket and provide instructions for us to send a veteran on your behalf.
Wow, that is fantastic. We have been talking with Amanda Price from Keller Williams, and they are a fantastic real estate company locally, to be sure, but they're just doing so many other wonderful things and giving back to the community. Have been. It's been part of your legacy, really,
yeah.
since you started. And now with the Cash Bash for the Wounded Veterans, and that's coming up Friday, November 10th. Go to kwcashbash.com if you would like to donate or purchase a ticket. Amanda, thank you so much for
Thank you
coming.
For having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and we'll have you back next year. I just love shining a light on what you guys are doing.
I appreciate it, and it helps with that awareness.
You bet. And thank you for listening. We'll have more for you next week.